I'm speaking with Dr. Jamie Lehr, a family practice physician who has practiced in the Ithaca area for 20 years. Dr. Lehr has served as the American Academy of Family Physicians liaison to the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. In 2009, he authored a book titled The Vaccine Answer Book, 200 Essential Answers to Help You Make the Right Decisions for Your Child. In a 2012 paper published in American Family Physician, Dr. Lehr was quoted as saying that adult vaccination coverage rates are significantly lower than those for children. And Dr. Lehr, thanks for coming in to talk with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Can I call you Jamie?
You can call me Jamie.
Okay. So there have been recent outbreaks of the mumps virus in two SUNY universities in New York, New Paltz, and Geneseo. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, more than 4,200 cases of the mumps has been reported this year, compared to about a third of that last year. So I'm just, I thought I would, you know, invite you onto the show today to talk about these recent outbreaks and why adults might want to consider getting certain vaccinations. So just to start off, what causes mumps?
Mumps is caused by a virus, just like the cold and other illnesses. Mumps is a specific virus that causes you to feel achy, have a fever, and get swelling in your parotid glands, which gives you that chipmunk look when you've got the mumps.
And the parotid glands are where?
The parotid glands are right around your jawbones, and So it makes your face sort of puff out.
And why should people be concerned about contracting this virus?
There's a couple of reasons. We used to have mumps all the time, and so everyone of a certain age has already had the mumps. Most of the time, the mumps is a fairly mild illness, and you're sick and maybe out of commission for about a week. However, what does happen is that a few people have the bad luck that they get a severe case, and that severe case might cause things like deafness, might cause something like meningitis, or in men can actually cause problems with the testicles and make them infertile in the future. So mumps can be a bad disease.
And you said that some people of a certain age have already had it. And what age would that be?
Well, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccines came out in the 1960s. So the presumption is that anyone born before about 1960 has had all of those diseases naturally.
And I read that at SUNY Geneseo, all confirmed cases of the mumps involved students who had received the recommended 2 MMR or measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine as children. And so why is it that those students actually contracted the mumps?
This is a great example of why vaccines are not perfect. So some vaccines are better than others, and the mumps vaccine in general is about 88 to 90% effective. And you might say, well, that still leaves 10% of the people to get the mumps disease and pass it around. But actually, there's this thing called herd immunity that when enough people get the vaccine and the disease is not around as much anymore, then you actually don't see the disease. Even 10% of the population won't get it because it doesn't get spread around as easily. When people have had the two doses, what we presume there is that over time, the vaccine has waning effectiveness. Some vaccines are very good and actually protect you for life. And some vaccines, it wanes over time, just like your protection over time from certain illnesses goes away as well.
And does the protection wane over time because the virus has changed and your immune cells don't recognize it anymore?
No, it's waned over time just because for some reason the memory cells of those cells which are fighting off that illness don't hang around as long. Mm. Whooping cough is another one which wanes over time. And measles is a case of one which is actually a very good vaccine that lasts for life. Hepatitis A also lasts for life.
Mm. And why is it that the outbreaks are happening on college campuses and not as much in, say, elementary schools?
You need to be fairly close contact. And so the 2010 outbreak did happen in elementary schools. They actually happened at Jewish yeshivas, where people are sitting across the desk and arguing with each other and having conversations. And so they thought that close contact facilitated the spread. Dorms and barracks are also very close contact. And so the presumption is that if you have people in that kind of close arena, they just have a likelihood of either being more likely to be exposed, or they might get a higher load of the virus by just having so many people close to them.
Yeah, I read that in New Paltz, a lot of the students who came down with the virus are athletes. And does that follow that logic?
It also follows that logic that you're spending the bus with them, you're hanging out in the locker rooms with them, you're seeing them a lot. It makes it easier to catch the virus.
And can we just back up for a moment and talk about vaccines? I know you talked about vaccinations a little. Can you just summarize how they work?
Vaccines are fascinating because what they're doing is giving you a mild case of the disease. There's, in general, two kinds of vaccines, live and killed. The live virus is actually giving you a very mild case of the disease, whereas a killed virus is actually exposing you to the bacteria, but you don't get the disease. However, either way, what you're seeing is a form of the virus or the bacteria, and your body says, this is strange. If I ever see it again, I'll be able to fight it off because you've created the cells and given them the memory to recognize these in the future. So vaccines are wonderful because they give you an excellent protection from the real disease if it ever comes along in the future.
And you mentioned that the mumps vaccine is not as good as the one for measles. Mm-hmm. And can you describe why that is?
Sometimes we don't know, and I actually am not an expert in those particular areas. There are certain kinds of memory cells like B cells and T cells, and you need these cells to be able to remember that you've seen this bacteria or virus before. And if those cells fade or for some reason the memory doesn't take, you can have waning immunity.
Why is it that most of the vaccinations are given during childhood?
Well, most of the time, the elementary schools actually are a great vector for spreading these diseases. So giving them before people get into elementary school or daycare do a good job of preventing this from happening. It's also true that those are a captive population. Kids come into the doctors a lot more often than adults, and so it's easier to give them all the vaccines that they need. Also, you don't particularly want the kids to get sick if you can prevent it. So the analogy that a lot of people use is, when do you put your helmet on when you're riding a bike? Do you put it on before you get on the bike? Do you put it on before you go down the hill? Or do you put it on after you hit the car? Well, you actually put it on before you start riding the bike because you don't know when you're going to hit the car. So giving the vaccine early means that you're protecting them no matter when they're going to get exposed.
What happens when some parents decide not to vaccinate their children? What's the effect on the general public?
You might remember that I talked about herd immunity a little while ago, and herd immunity is protecting you even though not everyone is getting the full vaccine. There are some people who can't get the vaccine for medical reasons, such as they've got a low immune system or they're getting chemotherapy. And sometimes, as I said, the vaccine doesn't work perfectly. But if enough people stop getting the vaccine, then the herd immunity goes away and it becomes much more likely that you'll have very large outbreaks of the diseases. In the United States, that's happened with mumps, that's happened with pertussis, and it also has happened not in as large a sense, but the measles outbreak at Disney World a few years ago, we had a large number of people there who weren't vaccinated and they were able to take the disease back to their communities and spread it around the country.
Can epidemiologists tell whether the outbreaks at SUNY New Paltz is due to some students not having had the vaccine?
As far as I know, that hasn't been shown to be true for this mm-hmm. situation. Most of the people, if not all of the people, have had their two vaccines. Mm-hmm. So this is more likely to be a waning immunity and close contact kind of situation.
Let's talk briefly about the influenza vaccine. Each flu season, both adults and children are encouraged to get the flu vaccine. Why is there a new one every year?
The flu vaccine, unfortunately, is not one of our most effective vaccines. There's two reasons for it. One is it's hard to make a good vaccine for the flu. And the second one is that the flu strains migrate every year. If you're lucky and they only migrate a little bit, then the vaccine is very effective. However, if they migrate a lot from the predicted strains, then the vaccine is not very effective. What we'd love to have is a flu vaccine that is strain independent, but we've not come up with something like that yet. So the idea that we have is that the flu vaccine, while not perfect, is the best that we have and gives you better than even chance of not getting the flu if you're exposed.
I was just going to ask if each year's vaccine is equally effective, and I guess that...
That's not true at all. There are some years where it's actually very minimally effective, and there are some years where it's over 70% effective. It's never perfect. The flu vaccine is just not one of those vaccines that always works.
And I was mentioning earlier that the number of adults who get vaccinated for any disease is fairly low. Do you know what the percentage is?
It depends on the population that you're talking about and also on the vaccine that you're talking about. So for some vaccines, it's very low, like only 10 or 20% of the people who are supposed to be getting pneumonia vaccines are actually getting them. For some, it's actually fairly high. So the elderly have been told for years immemorial that they need to get their flu vaccine. So that's over 50 or 60% of the population will get their flu vaccine. But in general, as I said, it's harder to get adults into the office to get their vaccines. And adults don't seem to think about vaccines as part of their natural medical care. When you think about going to the doctors to get your shots, you always think about it in the case of kids.
Mm-hmm. And so when you have your adult patients come in to see you, do you ever talk with them about having vaccinations? And if so, which ones do you recommend?
So this is a personal interest of mine. So literally you could be coming in for a sprained ankle and I'll look at your list and say, oh, you haven't had your pneumonia vaccine yet. You should get that today. Or, oh, it's flu season. You need your flu. So that's just a personal bias of mine that no matter what you're coming in for, I'm always going to bring up what vaccines you're due for. And some of my patients laugh because I do it every single time. The vaccines that generally adults should be thinking about, specifically, the flu vaccine is the one that goes for everyone. And then there's a tetanus vaccine that you're supposed to get every 10 years. There's a variation on the tetanus vaccine that also includes pertussis that you're supposed to get once during your life. And then once you've had that, you go back to the regular tetanus vaccine every 10 years. Mm-hmm. Depending on your illnesses, you also might be a candidate for getting other vaccines, such as if you have liver disease, you might want to get the hepatitis A and the hepatitis B vaccine. If you have diabetes or emphysema, you might want to be getting a pneumonia vaccine. If you've been in an accident or for some reason have lost your spleen, there are other vaccines that you look for. But in general, most people are going to be wanting to get the flu vaccine every year and the tetanus vaccine every 10 years.
And you mentioned the pneumonia vaccine, and what is that called?
There are actually two pneumonia vaccines. There's one that's been around for many, many years, and that's called Pneumovax. And then there's a new one, which we started by giving out in children, but they found that it actually works very well in the elderly as well. So that one is called pneumococcal 13, and the trade name for that one is called Prevnar 13. So the new recommendation in the last 2 years is that everyone over 65 should actually get both pneumonia vaccines separated by 12 months.
Okay. Well, Dr. Jamie Lehrer, family practice physician, thanks for talking with me today about mumps and adult vaccinations.
Thank you very much for having me today.